This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. President Bush visits the Mexican border area this week to address the issues of immigration. Later today, the president speaks at Davis-Monthan Air Force Base in Tucson, Arizona, and tomorrow he's scheduled to meet with members of the Border Patrol in El Paso. Earlier this year, the governors of both Arizona and New Mexico declared states of emergency in border areas, and the president's expected to emphasize tighter controls on illegal immigration. But he's also expected to renew calls for a guest worker program that would provide temporary visas for foreign workers if American citizens can't be found for certain jobs. Proponents argue that legal opportunities are critical to the success of any border control program and that American businesses need workers. Some critics believe a guest worker program would be unwieldy and ineffective. Others oppose it because they say it amounts to an amnesty for illegal immigrants. Later in the program, we'll hear two views on the use and definition of torture. But first, immigration and guest workers. If you have questions about how and whether such a program would work, give us a call. We'd especially like to hear from those of you who live and work near the border or who operate businesses there. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is TOTN@NPR.org. And joining us now is John Kamen, a reporter for the Arizona Republic. He's joining us from the studios of member station KJZZ in Phoenix. Nice to have you on the program today.
Glad to be with you.
The president has been talking about a guest worker program, I guess, for a couple of years now. Are we expecting details to finally emerge today?
Some of them. It's a little bit unknown whether he's ready to unveil his whole package, and I would imagine that he will do some of it here in Arizona and probably some in El Paso tomorrow. But it will be the first glimpse of what he really wants.
And this is going to be difficult for him politically, as you pointed out in an article in today's edition of the newspaper. Various federal representatives there, senators, members of Congress, have all floated plans that are, in some respects, mutually contradictory.
Well, talk about a fractious issue. There have been a half a dozen variations on what to do about illegal immigration, and they're all in the context of border security. But just as an illustration of how far apart the politicians are, we have three proposals introduced by Arizonans alone. There's the McCain-Kennedy bill, then there's a proposal by Senator John Kyle and Senator John Cornyn of Texas. And the third one that is most recent is Representative J.D. Hayworth, who has thrown a bill into the hopper. And they are quite different.
And some of them would call for, if you wanted to be a guest worker, you would have to, and you were in this country, you'd have to go back home and apply for it.
Well, that's a very controversial issue. It's not only whether there should be a guest worker program, and there is disagreement on that, but what to do about the people who are in the country now. The Kyle Cornyn bill would have everyone return, and that would be an exodus of some 11 million undocumented foreigners. And they would all have to go back to their countries of origin and then apply to come back if they want to be part of a guest worker program.
And I think Michael Chertoff, the Secretary of Homeland Security, was talking about that, the practicality of that on the television yesterday and speculating this is not likely to happen.
Yes, indeed. It would be a bureaucratic nightmare, among other things, but the business community is aghast that they would have to lose the people that are working now and replace them with people who are not experienced, and possibly it would take a while for them to qualify to come in under a guest worker program.
And just to illustrate, I think you pointed out if the president was in favor of the less onerous McCain-Kennedy bill, well, he'd find himself in opposition with Senator Kyle, for whom he's campaigning for re-election.
That is ironic, and the difficulty is that Kyle would he would be much more restrictive, and the McCain-Kennedy bill is the bipartisan effort that perhaps could stand Bush in good stead with both parties, an unusual condition, but where he's going to come down is awfully unknown until possibly later today and then certainly later this week.
Mm-hmm. Do guest worker programs exist on the state level in Arizona?
No, it's all a federal issue. There are visas that allow agricultural workers and then a very limited number of other types of workers, professionals, etc., to come into the country, but it's all handled on the federal level.
Mm-hmm. Given the divisions not only between the parties, but within the Republican Party on this issue, in terms of political capital, does the president have enough sway to bring people together on this issue, do you think?
It's going to be tough. I don't know that anyone has enough political capital to make any particular plan stick. Because, let me talk for a moment about the Hayworth plan. He is among the most conservative members of Congress, and mm-hmm. he is adamantly opposed to a guest worker program at all. So the president is going to make somebody mad, or lots of people mad, no matter where he comes down on the issue.
Last year, voters in Arizona approved a Proposition 200, which keeps illegal immigrants from voting and denies them, quote, any public benefits. I wonder how that new law conditions the environment there in Arizona.
Well, it scared a lot of people, and particularly the undocumented community. But the thrust of it is to send a message that illegal immigration is a huge issue here, and that we want somebody to resolve it.
Mm-hmm.
As a practical matter, undocumented immigrants were not trying to vote en masse, and the applications for benefits were not all that prevalent. So it's more of a message than it is a practical restriction.
In other states, Utah, for example, this issue has come down to arguments on the issue of driver's licenses. And how does that play out in Arizona?
Driver's licenses are not available to undocumented immigrants, and that's a problem for them and for the rest of the state. We have perhaps a half a million undocumented immigrants in the state now, and if they're all driving around without licenses and certainly without insurance, what do we do?
A question the president may or may not answer later today when he speaks there in Tucson, Arizona, or perhaps tomorrow when he meets with Border Patrol agents in El Paso, Texas. John Kamen, thank you very much for being with us today.
My pleasure.
John Kamen's a reporter for the Arizona Republic. He joined us from the studios of member station KJZZ in Phoenix, Arizona. Well, joining us now here in Studio 3A is Kathleen Newland, director of the Migration Policy Institute. Nice of you to join us today on Talk of the Nation.
It's a pleasure.
Guest worker program is just one part of an immigration policy. The president says it has to work hand in hand with border enforcement. How do they complement each other in your view?
Well, it's certainly true that there's no one single magic bullet to fix our broken immigration system. And I think the president is entirely correct that border enforcement needs to go hand in hand with some mechanism for meeting the very real needs of the U.S. labor market, mm-hmm. particularly for low-wage labor. We do have programs that permit employers to import skilled labor, but it's very difficult for them to bring in the tomato pickers and the meat packers and the household workers and so on. So we definitely need that part of it. But those two things alone are not enough. What we also need is a way to help employers determine who is eligible to work legally in this country. The current system is a joke. There are something like 20 different documents, and employers don't have to prove anything except that they looked at a document. We need an enforceable law to hold employers to their obligation to hire people who are legally authorized to work here. And I think most employers would like to have a way to do that.
If it's enforceable and does not put them in the position of being the Federal Bureau of Investigation, how are they supposed to know some perfectly, legal-looking document isn't?
That's right. They're not experts on this. So we need a workable, enforceable system for identifying which immigrants are eligible to work. And once that is in place, then we need penalties that will persuade employers to comply with it and dissuade immigrants from coming across the border without authorization. But all of these moving parts have to be in place before any one of them can work. I think that's really the most important thing to realize about this upcoming wave of what we hope will be sensible immigration reform.
Of course, we want your input on this as well. 800-989-8255. Email us, TOTN@npr.org. And let's take a call from Jonathan. Jonathan calling us from Jacksonville, Florida.
Hi there.
Hi there.
Hey, yeah, I was just actually calling basically in favor of any kind of reform in this area. I'm a property manager for several shopping centers in the Jacksonville area, and I basically find it impossible to find any help from, you know, the area to do the kind of jobs I need to do, just general maintenance, cleaning, painting, et cetera. And where I have found success is we do have a team of South Americans that do work for us legally, and they're the hardest workers I ever met.
Mm-hmm. Do you also find yourself employing people who you think may be illegal?
No, we're actually very firm on that. You know, we do require proper documentation. In fact, I do have a friend of mine through my church that is a master carpenter from Romania. That I would love to hire. I would love to pay him any amount that I could, but I can't hire him simply because he doesn't have the papers.
Kathleen Newland, Jonathan is certainly not alone in difficulty finding workers, rather.
That is very true, and that is a big part of the reason that we now have an estimated 11 million unauthorized immigrants in this country at the moment. The big draw is jobs. That's what people come for, and that's where they're needed.
Jonathan, good luck to you. Appreciate the phone call.
All right, thank you.
All right. If you'd like to join the conversation again, 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. You can also send us email, TOTN@npr.org. I'm Neil Conan. We'll be back after the break. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're discussing President Bush's proposal for immigration, which includes a call for a guest worker program. Our guest is Kathleen Newland with the Migration Policy Institute. And joining us is Rosemary Jenks of Numbers USA, an immigration think tank. And, of course, you're invited to join us as well, 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. And our email address is TOTN@npr.org. And Kathleen Jenks, thanks very much for joining us today. She's with us here today in Studio 3A. What's your take on the various bills? These proposals are all over the map.
They are all over the map, and there are many of them. And I think there's starting to be a recognition in the House, at least, that the American people want enforcement. They want enforcement of our current laws. They want stronger laws on the books before they want to see any kind of guest worker program. They want to know that the politicians who are promising them enforcement are serious. In 1986, when we passed the last amnesty, we were promised that the amnesty would be in exchange for employer sanctions. Well, the employer sanctions were never enforced. So this time around, I don't think that people are going to buy promises. They want to see it taking effect, being implemented, before they are willing to accept massive new numbers of foreign workers being imported. There's also a real question as to whether we do, in fact, need a guest worker program. Wages are not rising in this country. If there's a labor shortage, market says, the law of supply and demand says that wages should be rising. They're not. So it's very unclear that we actually do have a real need for these workers. Now, of course, employers want them. Because employers want as many workers as possible so that they have more to choose from and so that they don't have to raise wages.
And so they don't have to raise prices either.
Right.
You know, that's the other part of this.
Sure.
You want to pay more for your lettuce and your tomatoes and a bunch of other things.
I think most Americans would be willing to pay a nickel more for a head of lettuce if it meant that illegal immigration were under control.
What about, and we'll get back to Kathleen Newland in just a moment, but what about her point that really these two things have to work hand in glove? You can't have one without the other.
I would actually say that I would say the opposite, because you can't have a guest worker program if you can't ensure that the guests leave at the end. We don't have any system in place right now to make that happen. Mm-hmm. So anyone who tells you that you know they're implementing a guest worker program, it's just simply not possible with our current infrastructure. We don't have the capability of ensuring that someone leaves this country when his or her visa expires, which is why 40% of the illegal population is estimated to have come on a legal visa and overstayed.
Mm-hmm. Kathleen Newland, the president is expected, and again, we're not so sure, but to talk about a three-year program. And after that, the guest worker would be required to go home. How would that work?
Well, I agree with part of what Rosemary says, in that if the demand for workers' labor continues, it's hard to persuade either that person's employer or the person himself or herself that it's time to go home. There are costs involved with churning the labor force. There are tremendous administrative costs with, you know, processing out one worker and processing in another. So I think in order to be realistic, that this that a program, a guest worker program, has to be responsive to the real conditions in the labor market. There has to be a reality check at every stage of it to make sure that workers are needed, that they're being paid properly, that they're not undercutting the labor market. In other words, part of the interior enforcement effort has to be an enforcement effort on wages and labor standards, mm-hmm. as well as on legal status. But having said that, I think it's only realistic that if you have a labor market demand and a worker who over time becomes experienced, puts down roots in a community, that some of those people are going to want, and in my view deserve, a pathway to legal permanent residence and ultimately citizenship. It just doesn't make sense to keep churning the labor force in this extremely inefficient and costly way.
Mm-hmm. And Rosemary Jenks, we'll get to the calls in just a moment, but there are some proposals indeed that do call for people after a certain period of time to be qualified to become citizens.
Absolutely. And that, I think, flies in the face of the arguments that are being used to justify a guest worker program. A guest worker program is supposed to take care of a temporary labor need. Well, if it's a temporary need, then there is no need for a permanent worker. So, you know, what is it that we're talking about here? Let's be honest in the debate that we're having. Mm-hmm. Are we talking about increasing the American population, or are we talking about guest workers? That's a fundamental problem that we have in the debate.
Let's get some listeners in on the debate. Let's go now to Steve. Steve calling us from, this is where the issue is today, Tucson, Arizona.
Good afternoon, Neil. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure, Steve.
I am at this time against the illegal the worker program. Here's why. At least as far as I can figure out, it would create a class of worker in this country who they would not be citizens. Therefore, they would have no rights. Would they be able to join a union? Would they be able to form one? What is the legal structure or mechanism for protecting them in the workplace or anything else? And, you know, I think if you look at the political nature of this issue, and Republican Party being the party of big business, I think they would like nothing more than to create a near slave class of worker. And I think we should be taking care of citizens in this country first, and I'm not against helping my friends across the border, but I want to see some kind of structure for their protection. And it's of note that the congressman here of over 20 years, Jim Colby, who promotes the worker program, has decided not to run for re-election after 20-some years of being in office, and at his town meetings, when he is confronted with this issue, he completely skirts it and doesn't take any questions on it.
Let me ask you about the second class, Steve was putting it. Would this create a slave class?
Well, Steve, that's what we've got now, is with 11 million undocumented workers who really do live in a rights-free zone. They have no claim on, they're even afraid to go to the police when, you know, they're the victims of crimes and so on. What a guest worker program would do at the very least is bring those people out of the shadows so that we know who they are, and, you know, there's a security element of this, but also that they would, within the framework of a guest worker program, have certain rights, for mm-hmm. example, to be paid the prevailing wage, to be working in a safe environment. These are rights that undocumented workers have a great deal of difficulty enforcing. So if Steve is concerned about human rights, I think he ought to be behind a temporary worker program.
Presumably any guest worker program is not going to be 11 million guest workers.
We don't know what the magnitude of it is. The president has said he would like to match willing workers with willing employers. We know there are a lot of willing employers out mm-hmm. there, so we don't know what the size of this program would be.
Rosemary Jenks, wouldn't there be a possibility of a one set of guest workers and then still another, perhaps even larger set of illegal aliens?
Well, certainly that possibility exists, and a guest worker program will not work if it's running parallel with continued illegal immigration, because the illegal aliens will undercut the guest workers in wages and benefits and so on. But, I have to ask, is it better that we have a legal servant class or an illegal servant class? Because that's, potentially what we're talking about is creating a legal stream for a servant class.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, people talk about the jobs Americans won't do. There's no job an American won't do if paid a livable wage. But if we're not going to pay livable wages, then what we're talking about is importing a servant class.
Steve, thanks very much for the call.
Thanks for taking it.
Sure. Let's go now to Nancy. Nancy's calling us from Fruitland in Washington.
Hi.
Hi.
I had just a point to make. In the Dalles, Oregon, where cherries are grown, the population used to more than double during picking season, and they actually seem to me to be the immigrant workers contributing to the local economy through, going to the grocery store and so forth. But people talk as if they're draining the resources of the local communities, and I just wanted to know, is that true? Are they draining? Does the contribution they're making equal the services that they're using?
Mm-hmm.
I just always saw them as a positive thing in the community, and we're happy that they were there.
It's not a simple question, is it, Rosemary Jenks?
It's not at all a simple question, but the fact is that most of the workers, and especially in agriculture, are low-skill and therefore low-wage workers. It used to be that it would just be young men coming across the border and doing these jobs. Now, more and more, they're bringing their families with them, and they're settling in these areas. And that, it turns out, if the taxpayers are educating their children, they're not paying enough taxes on the low wages to educate their children or provide other government services, then it is likely that at least at the state and local level, they will be drawing more from the coffers than they're paying in. But the fact that they send a lot of money home contributes to that as well.
To their home country.
To the home country, yes, as remittances.
Yes.
That's money that's taken completely out of the U.S. economy. So I think increasingly in the past couple of decades, we are seeing that the illegal population, because it's settling here, is an increasing cost.
Mm-hmm. Kathleen Newland, there are other ways to calculate this. These people pay taxes and don't collect on a lot of government services they're paying for.
That's certainly true, especially since many of the undocumented use false Social Security numbers, so they never see the Social Security payments that they actually make. They're providing a subsidy to our current system, which, as everyone knows, is under strain. But they do contribute to the local economy, and it's not even the case that the money they send home to their family disappears completely from our economy, given how tightly the U.S. and Mexican economy in particular are tied. The corn that their families back home are using to make their tortillas is most likely grown in the United States. So it is a very complex relationship. I think it's also important to remember that the jobs that the low-wage undocumented laborers are doing are supporting other higher-paid jobs that are mostly held by Americans. Every undocumented worker in a garment factory is helping to support the jobs of the accountants and the managers and the technicians and so on who are working in the upper echelons of those jobs. And if the undocumented workers weren't there, or if some kind of low-wage labor were not available, those jobs would most likely go offshore.
Nancy, thanks for the call.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Here's an email we got from Lee in Palo Alto, California. The only way to dissuade employers from hiring illegal immigrants is a national ID system involving some form of biometric identification. Extreme conservatives and liberals both hate this idea with a fiery passion, but they also hate the tidal wave of illegal immigrants that has flooded across our borders. We as a country are going to have to make a Hobson's choice: virtually unrestricted illegal immigration, the current system, quote-unquote, or a national ID system. Pick one. Rosemary Jenks, is that the choice?
Not quite. It is certainly true that we have to have mandatory employment verification. Without question, unless we do that, we can, you know, build a fence all the way around the border, and we will not stop illegal immigration as long as the jobs are available. But a mandatory employment verification system doesn't necessarily have to include a national ID card. It can be done without. And in fact, there is one in existence right now that it does not involve a national ID called the card. The basic pilot program is the program we have now, except that it's voluntary. The employer simply types into the computer the name, social security number, and birth date of the new hire. Mm-hmm. And it's verified that that person is either legally eligible to work or not. Mm-hmm. And there are some ways to get around that that can be fixed by the government that don't require a national ID card. A national ID card also would do the job. I mean, David Dreyer's bill would essentially create a what he calls a secure Social Security card that looks pretty close to a national ID card, even though the bill says it's not. You know, it could be done either way, mm-hmm. but it needs to be done. Mandatory verification of employment is the key.
Congressman Dreyer, of course, a Republican of California, chairman of the Rules Committee. We're talking about guest workers and immigration. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Kathleen Newland, I wanted to get your reaction to that proposal. I mean, enforce this policy on employers, but again, provide them with some way of checking that is reliable, quick, and inexpensive.
Absolutely. On December 6th, next week, my institute, the Migration Policy Institute, will release a whole series of papers which look precisely at this question of employment verification in some detail. And we've done an analysis of the three kinds of pilot programs that have existed, including the basic pilot program, which is going on now, and agree that there are ways short of a national ID card of making a system work for employers and for immigrants. So it can be done, and it is a question of resources and, of course, of the political will. But if the system that is put in place doesn't meet the demands of the labor market, doesn't take a realistic look at the fact that some guest workers will stay, some of them will, some of them don't want to, and would welcome this kind of a program. I think all of these moving parts have to work together in order to give us an immigration system that will work at last.
Let's get another caller in. This is Sue, and Sue's calling us from San Jose, California.
Hi.
Hi.
I am an employer. I own a paving company in California, and we hire about 15 employees in the field. The only people that apply for the jobs are Mexican people. We very rarely have anyone other than Spanish-speaking Mexican people applying for the jobs. When we hire them, all we're legally required to see is a driver's license and a Social Security card, which they have, and they look just like mine. But I know that some of them must be illegal because as their driver's licenses are expiring, they're unable to renew them now. And in California, that's a big issue. But some of these guys are guys that have been here for 7 and 8 years working for us. They're making $50,000 to $75,000 a year. They've got full benefits. Their kids were born here. They're paying taxes. And yet I'm scared to death that the INS is going to show up at some point and we're going to lose half our workforce.
Mm-hmm. And you're certainly not alone in that, Sue. There are worker shortages that we're hearing about as well in the agricultural industries along the border. Rosemary Jenks, what to do?
Well, it's a tough question because, I mean, in agriculture, for example, 50% of agricultural workers are unemployed at any given time.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, there may be spot shortages in certain locations, and in agriculture especially, perhaps the answer is a transportation system that moves the workers to where they're needed rather than having them, you know, 50% of them sit idle while they're unemployed.
Mm-hmm.
For small businesses like us, I mean, these
right.
are employees that have been with us for years.
Yep.
And as we hire new people, the paperwork I'm looking at, it looks just like mine. I have
sure.
no way of knowing if they're... Well, and there just aren't any other options other than going union, which would cost even more than our labor costs are right now.
Right. Well, and that's always the option, is higher wages. I mean, that's...
Well,
she's paying $50,000 to $75,000 a year. It doesn't sound like this is minimum wage.
And no, not at all.
They've got medical benefits, dental. We've got life insurance. We've got 401k. There's a lot of reasons that somebody would be attracted to a job like this. But I am not getting your average white guy applying for these jobs.
Sue, thanks for the call. Good luck with the problem. And maybe later today when the president speaks in Tucson, we'll hear at least a proposal to address your situation. Thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
And by the way, you should stay tuned to coverage of that speech later today on All Things Considered from NPR News. Kathleen Newland and Rosemary Jenks, thanks you both very much for being with us today.
It was a great pleasure.
When we come back from a short break, we're going to be hearing two views on the definition and the use of torture. This is Talk of the Nation from NPR News.